Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, September 4th, 2015. IGAD has postponed the workshop for the two parties that signed the peace deal to discuss security arrangements during a transitional period.
IGAD should call a spade a spade. In case there is a delay from the side of the rebels, they should clearly state that it is the rebels. List that has not been received. There is no question of the parties are in violation as it used to be. We will not tolerate that language again.
And residents of Bor Town are welcoming a new bank that opened its doors in Jungle Estate.
Then now you are happy to open your account, then you put your money to save the money. But before you did not have the place to save money, only to keep it at home. Then you go and take that money, then you eat. But now you are happy.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. IGAD has postponed a workshop at which the parties to South Sudan's conflict are supposed to discuss arrangements and recent ceasefire. The workshop is one of the provisions of the IGAD brokered peace deal for South Sudan that was signed last month. The workshop was supposed to begin tomorrow and run until Monday. As Philip Thornaleo reports for VOA from Juba, Information Minister Michael Makui says the workshop is essential if there is to be lasting peace in South Sudan.
Makui says IGAD sent an email yesterday to the parties to the peace deal announcing that the workshop is being postponed.
According to this email, it's very short, very simple. It says, dear all, please be informed that due to delays of the participants list and logistical problems, we are forced to push the workshop.
Makui distributed the email from IGAD to reporters at a news conference today. The email says that a new date for the workshop will be announced as soon as possible. Makui insists that the government is not to blame for the delay. He says government officials sent IGAD a list 2 days ago of 11 officials who have been nominated to attend the workshop.
IGAD should call a spade a spade. In case there is a delay from the side of the rebels, they should clearly state that it is the rebels. List that has not been received. There is no question of the parties are in violation as it used to be. We will not tolerate that language again. Anybody who is responsible for whatever delays should be held responsible for the delay.
According to the peace agreement that President Salva Kiir signed last week, 9 days after opposition leader Riek Machar signed it, the key topics of discussion at the workshop will be the drawdown of forces, the establishment of demilitarized zones and cantonment areas in South Sudan, and the size of forces that will provide security in poor towns, including Juba. Makui says the workshop is a necessary step if the guns are to be silent in South Sudan.
All these, if they are not done, you cannot talk of an effective permanent ceasefire. I also call upon IGAD at this moment to expedite this process, because without this workshop, there will be no permanent ceasefire. The permanent ceasefire will be in paper, and it will not be operational on the ground.
Makui says 5 of the 11 officials who will attend the workshop for the government will work on a committee discussing security arrangements during a 30-month transitional period, and the other 6 will work on maintaining the permanent ceasefire that took effect last Saturday. Both sides in South Sudan's 20-month conflict have accused each other of violating the ceasefire. And yesterday, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry called President Kiir to express Washington concerns at the repeated ceasefire breaches. The U.S. State Department says Mr. Kiir assured Kerry that the government of South Sudan is committed to implementing the peace agreement and respecting the ceasefire. The United Nations Security Council will be briefed later today by the head of UN mission in South Sudan, Helen Margaret Loy, by video link from Juba, on developments in South Sudan since the signing of the peace agreement. A statement released ahead of the briefing says it is expected to focus on violations of the ceasefire and on the now-delayed workshop in Addis Ababa. One question the Security Council would like to clear up is whether the UN mission will have a place at the table and what role it might play at the workshop, the statement says. For VOA News, I'm Philip Tonaleo in Juba.
Riek Machar's SPLM in opposition is also denying responsibility for postponement of the IGAD workshop. Ezekiel Lolgavkod is the Secretary for Foreign Relations Committee of the SPLM in opposition. He says, like the government, the rebels have named their team to attend the workshop in Addis Ababa. Gavkod insists the SPLM in opposition is fully committed to peace. Gavkod spoke with VOA's James Batty before IGAD announced the workshop had been delayed.
My leader, Dr. Riek Machar, if you can recall, he was the first to sign this compromise peace agreement on the 17th of August. So he's for peace, he's committed to peace, and we are also happy and do appreciate President Salva for signing this compromise peace agreement on the 26th of August. We are committed to this peace, and we have selected 11 senior army officers to attend this workshop in Addis Ababa.
Right now, the Sudan military is in Juba. What's the requirement, that they move out of Juba?
In the agreement, yes, Juba has to be demilitarized because this is the capital of the Republic of South Sudan. And then we will have a joint integrated police and a joint integrated national security. And also all the forces in South Sudan will be put in cantonment, so that the joint command from both forces will now be counting the soldiers from both sides, verifying them, all the ammunition and also the guns and all the equipment that they're having will now be verified, and they will start the recordings.
During that time of the formation of the new army, what happens to governing?
Well, in the army, there will be a joint command from the two forces, the forces of SPLM, SPLA in opposition, and the forces of the government of the Republic of South Sudan. This process of creating a new army will take 18 months, so that you have an army that is loyal to the state, that is disciplined, well-trained, and they are committed to defend the Republic of South Sudan. And they are now loyal to certain regions or sections of the community in South Sudan.
Do you, the SPLM in opposition, do you all think that this agreement is workable?
Yes, it is workable. That's why we are committed to it. And that's why my leader, Dr. Machar, signed on to it. This is the best compromise that we can use to transform South Sudan. It is workable. It is implementable. The letters is there, and we are asking the spirit, because you can have a very, very good agreement, but if the spirit of implementing it is not there, it will not be. And if the spirit is there to implement this, you will have an implementable agreement. On our side, the spirit is there, and we are asking the side of Juba to have the spirit to implement the agreement.
How soon, Ezekiel, before the world sees Riek Machar or you and all the other leaders of the SPLM in opposition in Juba?
We have a pre-transitional period, which is actually 3 months. By November this year, you will have a functional government of national unity. So the transitional government of national unity will be sworn in by November. So my leader definitely will assume his responsibility as the first vice president of the Republic of South Sudan.
That was Ezekiel Lolgavkod, the Secretary for Foreign Relations Committee for Riek Machar's SPLM in opposition. He was speaking with VOA's James Batty from Nairobi. And we have just seen a letter sent by Machar to IGAD lead mediator Seyoum Mesfin asking that the workshop on ceasefire and transitional security arrangement be adjourned until after a meeting of the National Liberation Council, or NLC. Machar says in the letter that the meeting of the NLC, which is the highest decision-making body of the SPLM, is scheduled for Wednesday next week. It was unclear if Machar was referring to a meeting of the SPLM in opposition NLC or the NLC of the ruling party in Juba. There is a new commercial bank in Bor where residents of Jonglei State Capital can deposit money, get loans and seek other financial services. Kush Commercial Bank officially began doing business in Bor today. The new bank brings the number of commercial banks operating in Bor to 2. Most banks pulled out of the town when fighting broke out in December 2013, as Jacob Achik reports from Bor.
Residents of Bor are delighted by the opening of Kush Bank, which is housed in the building that used to be occupied by Kenya Commercial Bank, or KCB. Coach Bank is one of only two banks that are doing business in Bor. The other is Liberty Commercial Bank, which opened here last year. Mawen Deng, who is chairman of the board of directors at Coach Bank, says his institution is offering a host of banking services to residents of Jongla Estate.
It will be have a personal banking, corporate banking, and loan and credit section. Those are the opportunities available. We will have an online banking system, which is on internet banking system, and there are more. You will come and experience it yourself and compare it with the RS, and that's where you will find us, how unique we are.
The acting governor of Jongla Estates, Baba Medan Konyi, welcomed the opening of the new bank. He said Bor residents should stop keeping their assets at home and instead putting their money in a bank where it will be safe.
I want to assure you that Jongla Estate and Bor town especially is well secured. So your money here is safe. Don't worry about your money, because our police are ready to protect and give security to your bank. Now we have two banks. We have Liberty Bank and Coach Bank, and we are still waiting for every bank to come, and KCB and others.
Those last banks that Medan mentioned shut their doors and left Bor when South Sudan erupted in conflict nearly 2 years ago. Bor resident Daniel Anyeth Makwey used to bank with KCB. He says Coach Bank will give people like him more options when they need a loan or when to transfer money. Makwey expects that more competitions will bring down the fees that customers like him are charged by bank in Bor.
If we have more bank, then there will be competition like in a Liberty Bank. They are charging people highly, in which if you are transacted your 50,000 to another account in Juba, then they take 270. If it is other bank like Coach Bank, you put your money here and you get them there in Juba without taking even any charges.
Victoria Yar, who owns a small shop in Bor, opened an account with Coach Commercial Bank today. She said even though she can only bank about £5 a day, she knows the money will accumulate interest and grow if she put it in the bank. She also says she feels certain her money is safe in the bank than it is at home.
Then now you are happy to open your account, then you put your money to save the money. But before you did not have the place to save money, only to keep it at home. Then you go and take that money, then you eat. But now you are happy. You open account, then you save your money.
Before the political crisis erupted, Jongla residents had several banks and financial services available to them. But many of the banks pulled out of Bor after they were looted in the earlier days of the fighting. The race was fought for more banks to return to Bor when President Salva Kiir and opposition chief Riek Machar signed a peace deal for South Sudan last month. For VOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
Still on money matters, students at South Sudan's University of Bahr al-Ghazal are complaining about this year's higher tuition fee. For example, a medical student must pay 5,000 South Sudanese pounds, up from 1,800 pounds last year. As Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from WOW, some students fear they won't be able to complete their studies.
Just like medical students, veterinary students are also getting hit with higher fees this year. They must pay 2,000 South Sudanese pounds, that is up 600 pounds from last year. And students studying economics and education must pay 1,000 pounds instead of 800 they paid last year. Many students or their parents say they simply cannot afford the new fees. Fourth-year medical student Odong John says the new fees could cause more students to quit. He points out most of South Sudan's university students come from poor families. Odong says the government's decision to increase tuition fees sends the wrong message.
If at all that the government is going to increase, we are going to encounter a lot of problems and there will be a lot of dropout. So therefore, we really emphasize that if at all they can sympathize with the students and the fee remain as it is, it will be good, because first of all, like last year, most of the results were blocked and most of the students, even up to now, they have not finished the payment.
Second-year veterinary medicine student Jock Dude says it is bad timing, considering the country's current economic situation.
Our economy at the moment is bad, not like before, and the country has no money. This will affect us so much. So we are appealing to the high authorities to sympathize with the students and let them continue with the previous structure, because if they impose the new tuition fee, many of us will not study.
But second-year education student Beat Permino believes if the university uses the extra money generated from higher fees to hire more lecturers and improve the facilities, it is justified.
This thing is not, by the way, bad, provided that the things that the administration of the university is just trying to do, like increasing some tuition fees for this academic year or some years to come, it's not bad. But one thing is, when everything's needed by the students is provided, then that thing is fine. We don't mind of how high the tuition fees is.
Helen Joseph, a third-year veterinary medicine student at the university, says her parents cannot afford the new fees, nor can they afford to bring their children home.
I just heard that they are going to increase fees to 2,000 South Sudanese pounds. This is not good for us students. Our parents are not capable of paying that amount. For example, now some of us have remained in the hostel unable to go home, and the administration have stopped providing student food.
Some university officials agree with the students that the new fees are too high, but that decision was made by the National Education Ministry in Juba. Western Baal Ghazal University's Vice Chancellor, Samson Wasara, says administrators are meeting today to discuss the higher fees and are expected to announce a decision on Monday. For VOA, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio, reporting in WOW.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the UN's World Food Program warns it may have to end its humanitarian flights in Sudan if it doesn't receive millions of dollars in funding by the end of this month. That story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you like better, sweet foods or savory foods?
I like sweet foods because I think it's a habit that I've cultivated and I haven't been able to break that habit yet.
I like Sabis food because there is no too much sugar and for me, especially me as a bull, I have problem with food which has contained a lot of sugar. So even if they don't put anything, I can take even the tea. I can take the tea without sugar.
For me, I used to take vegetables, but sometimes sweet can happen. I used to take sometimes, but not frequent anyway. I am at the age that does not require this one, sweet things. So I don't usually take things, sweet things like that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The extremist group Boko Haram continues to kill hundreds of people each year, each month, with attacks across northeastern Nigeria. At the same time, analysts say it's hard to tell where the fighters are based, as the group appears to control little or no territory. Chris Stein has more on this puzzle from Lagos.
The Nigerian army announced this week that it had recaptured the town of Gamboro in Gala along the Cameroonian border from Boko Haram. What remains unclear is at what point they lost control of it. The town was occupied by Boko Haram early this year, but retaken during a multi-nation offensive that resulted in the militants losing most of the territory they had seized. At some point after, Boko Haram overran Gamboro again. Rabe Abubakar is a spokesman for Nigeria's military.
They were there, you know, for some months before this latest success against them.
Abubakar says Boko Haram doesn't control any other towns in Nigeria. But as this week's battle in Gamboro and Gala shows, the group remains far from finished. The governors of Borno and Yobe states in the northeast said in July that the militants still controlled 5 local government areas in their states. And they're still raiding remote villages, killing hundreds of people each month. President Muhammadu Buhari last month gave Nigeria's top military commanders 3 months to defeat Boko Haram. Michael Klein, senior analyst at Drum Cusack, says that's put the military under pressure to announce successes against the group.
We may well continue to see reports that the military has, quote, retaken territory from Boko Haram, territory that we didn't know was being held to begin with.
Despite battlefield losses earlier this year, Boko Haram maintains a large fighting force that's able to hide along Nigeria's northeast border, Klein says. That will prove a challenge for the military.
So it might just become a game of whack-a-mole where you rout out fighters from a certain area only to have them end up in another place.
Troops from Chad, Cameroon, Niger, and Benin are supposed to soon join Nigeria in fighting the group. But Klein says it will take years of development and job creation in the northeast to end the insurgency for good. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
The UN World Food Programme says it will be forced to shut down a life-saving air service in Sudan by the end of the month unless nearly $10 million is found in funding. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The WFP and other aid agencies rely upon the UN Humanitarian Air Service, or UNHAS, to get aid and personnel where they are needed. The service is especially crucial in Sudan, where vast distances, insecurity, and poor roads make it virtually impossible for aid workers to reach remote areas by car. But the air service may be grounded in Sudan unless the WFP can close a $9.9 million funding shortfall. WFP spokeswoman Bettina Lusher tells VOA the service has become even more critical since Sudan's government began new military operations against rebel groups in December.
In the last few months, the situation has become more complicated. So more than 200,000 people have been displaced. And Sudan is a country with very little infrastructure. Many of the aid operations are in far-fetched places. If the UN Humanitarian Air Service cannot fly the aid workers into those regions, we cannot reach some 40 locations where the humanitarians are working.
In the first half of this year, UNHAS Sudan transported nearly 20,000 passengers and more than 110 metric tons of cargo. It also has carried out some 16 medical and security evacuations. Lusher warns these critical services will stop by the end of September if UNHAS is forced to shut down for lack of funds. She says humanitarian workers will have to resort to dangerous road travel to reach people in need, and many people will likely be deprived of food, water, health care, and other essential relief. WFP says the amount of money requested is a relative pittance when weighed against the assistance it buys for millions of people in this crisis-ridden country. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Meanwhile, a Sudanese official says his government is coordinating with the World Food Programme to do what it can to avert suspension of WFP flights by the end of the month. Sudan's Minister of Information, Ahmed Bilal, tells South Sudan In Focus reporter Ayen Bior the government is trying to help but worries the rainy season will make matters worse.
We are coordinating with the WFP, and there is a big cooperation between the government of Sudan and the WFP. From our side, we are going to do our best, actually, to prepare as much as we can. After all, we need support from other NGOs or from the international community. We are pledging to them that to help, actually, these refugees.
What they're saying right now is that they're running out of money specifically for their air service. So could you tell me a little bit more specifically what Sudan
this is a big problem. In fact, actually, the WFP is running short. Our resources are limited. And we need food for our own people and so forth. I think others should interfere and help. But I assure you, those who are in Sudan, they will not die from hunger. But the places where which are not under our control is a big problem, a very big problem. And these people actually are trapped somewhere, and we cannot reach them. And so we need help, we need actually assistance from others to help.
what role does the Sudanese government play in this crisis when the World Food Program is asking for $10 million?
I'm far away. I don't know how much the Sudan government is going to prepare from this. But usually we participate. Usually we pay. Usually we give some of from our resources food. I don't know how much, but usually we do our best.
That's Ahmed Bilal, Sudan's information minister, speaking with Ayen Bior on that terrible phone line from Khartoum earlier today. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's news with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. IGAD has postponed a workshop in Addis Ababa where the two sides in South Sudan's conflict are supposed to settle on security arrangements. The workshop is one of the agreed-to things that are supposed to take place under the IGAD-brokered peace deal. The session was to begin tomorrow and run until Monday. Information Minister Michael McQuay says the workshop is essential for sustained peace in South Sudan. He says IGAD emailed the parties yesterday announcing that the workshop is being postponed, citing logistical problems. McQuay says the government is not to blame for the delay. He says officials sent IGAD a list of 2 days ago of 11 officials who'd been nominated to attend the workshop. According to the peace deal, which President Kiir signed last week, the key topics of discussion at the workshop will be the drawdown of forces, establishment of demilitarized zones and containment areas, and, size of forces that will provide security in four towns, including Juba. The UN World Food Program says it will be forced to shut down a life-saving air service in Sudan by the end of the month unless $9.9 million in funding is found. The WFP and other aid agencies rely upon the UN Humanitarian Air Service to get aid workers where they're needed. The service is especially crucial in Sudan, where vast distances in security and poor roads make it virtually impossible for aid workers to reach remote areas by car. But the air service may be grounded in Sudan unless the WFP can come up with the money by the end of September. And finally, residents of Bor are embracing the opening of a new commercial bank in the Jonglei state capital. Kush Commercial Bank officially began doing business today. There are now two commercial banks operating in Bor. A number of banks left the town when fighting broke out in December of 2013. The other is Liberty Commercial Bank, which opened last year. Wang Deng, who is chairman of the board of directors at Kush Bank, says his institution is offering a host of banking services to residents of Jonglei State. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, Carol. And that's the end of our show for this week. We now leave you with the song City Alosi by Eddie Kenzo. This one goes out to our listeners in Wao, especially my colleague Michael Atit, who loves dancing to this song. We have been listening to Eddie Kenzo with the song City Alosi. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Kachole kaota da, neba kende kakanga, etali musana.